to the Tweety Couch Guitar Therapy Session, where we talk about all things guitar related. My name is Dr. T, and I am not a licensed therapist, but I play one on a podcast. Today on the Tweety Couch, we are counseling on failure is an option. I've said it for years. Failure is an option. Most people hate this statement, but it is true. Of course, I'd rather see success, and sometimes things are out of our control, but nevertheless, it is an option. Another statement I have often remembered saying was, if you fail to plan, then you plan to fail. It is because of these statements that today we will discuss the failures that we have seen, what we do to solve it, and how we took action to make sure we never had to deal with it again. But how important is a backup? Does it matter what cases I use? Can others learn from my failures? Should I worry about my bandmates? What do I do when the whole sound system fails? Does duct tape really fix everything? And who breaks a bass string? Well, we will discuss this and more on this group therapy session with Jeremy on the Tweed Couch. Well, Jeremy, thank you so much for being here again. We've only done one of these, and I feel like we should have done 100 of these already because our relationship is unique in the sense that you are sometimes my boss, sometimes my colleague, always my friend, and there have been some I disagree, but I'll do it your way just to see what happens on both of our sides. So you know what? Compromise is in us. We need to have therapy. Yeah. Couples counseling, really.
That's true. Yeah, thanks for having me, Dr. T. I really appreciate it. It's nice to be back on the couch again, making sure to situate myself right where the face down divot is. I like to make sure and just kind of rub around and really get settled in. Yeah, that works
Jason
out nice.
Appreciates it.
Yeah. I always notice that he sounds a little bit happier on the episodes after I've been here. That's nice.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
So in this idea of what we're going to go ahead and have some therapy on today, the idea that I had was based off of something you sent me. And you said, hey, I got this idea. We should do this. And I came up with a title that is Failure is an Option.
Yeah.
Because although a lot of people will say, oh, no, failure is not an option. No, it's an option.
Yep.
Not one you should choose, but it's always an option.
Yeah.
So I want to get an idea of what you were thinking, because we went back and forth on text, and I don't like to call someone and go, what was your idea? Because then they pretty much have the podcast with me right then.
Right. Yep.
So in that, I think I have an idea of what I would like to talk about in this, but I think you also have an idea. So this is where we're doing our couples therapy. We're going to hear each other out a little bit, and we're just going to have a conversation.
Right. Yeah, so Dr. T, I got to thinking, you guys talk about guitars, and you talk about gear an awful lot in this podcast. And
yeah.
I was thinking, you know, what happens when you go to apply this guitar into a situation where it's being used? So whether that's a gig, you know, at a local VFW or a bar or something, or that's a gig at a church, or
okay,
let's say you're out on tour, right? So you've got a 6-stop tour lined up or a 12-stop tour lined up, and you're not able to come back to your house after every single gig. Or, let's say it's a fly-to event, which, you know, both you and I are in the time of our lives where, you know, we do these fly-to events, and it's a different logistical thing. But, you know, having done all of those things, there's a lot of things that you need to think about taking with you to make sure that you're able to do the job that you're being paid to do. Well, not always in bar gigs. Sometimes in bar gigs, you're getting paid in beer. But,
that's fair.
You know, so that you're able to do what you need to do and be able to put your best performance out there.
Mm-hmm.
So what happens when your gear fails you, whether it's your guitar fails you or your pedals or even, you know, your strap or anything like that? What do you do? What do you do if you forgot something at home?
Oh, good Lord. Yes.
What do you do if your bandmate, let's say it's hypothetically speaking, your brother Paul, What do you do? Right. Who is my bandmate? What do you do if you forget something at home?
Uh-huh. Right? Or you get to the fly gig and your guitar has been crushed. That could be a thing, too.
That's right, which has also happened to your brother, Paul.
You know what? You're actually bringing up some PTSD at this point, because there have been a few times where something like this has occurred. And, okay, I'm gonna give one example of where I think you're at. And there was one time I was playing with Second Adam, and we were playing at Valley Fair, which is an amusement park in Minnesota. Mm-hmm. And we're playing the last song. Thank goodness it was the last song, because I go, I need backups. Backups right. are important. Yep. And I want it to be something really usable. And so I'm playing my Les Paul. It's going great. Rocking real hard. Everything's great. And all of a sudden, I break the high E string. And I go, you know what? It's fine. Now, I'm the only guitar player in the band, because bass doesn't count, right?
Right. Yeah, okay. Fair enough. Gotcha.
Everyone needs to know Jeremy is a bass player. So.
Yeah, all right. I am. I am a bass player. I'm one of those people that without the bass, it's very low and thin, and you don't know what the harmony is. And yeah, it's crazy. But
so I'm playing this guitar, and all of a sudden the high E string breaks, which I usually don't break strings, but I'm playing outdoors, probably hadn't changed them in a while. Put the guitar down, grab my PRS. Don't really break strings on the PRS often either. No big deal. Start playing that guitar, and all of a sudden, the high E breaks.
That's no good.
And it's the same song, two guitars, same string. Hmm. And I put the guitar down, and it's just the last chorus is all we're at that point. And I went, you know what? Time to just rock the mic, let the bass, the drums do their thing. We had people out front, and I just started singing into the mic and then putting it into their face and singing into the mic. Basically, at that point, I went, I'm no longer a guitar player slash singer. Right. I am a singer slash showman.
Right.
It's karaoke night, people. Let's make this happen. So that's a point in which I go, yeah, it failed. And what did I learn from it? Honestly, not much of anything, because I'm not bringing a third guitar with me.
No. But what you did learn, though, is what do you do when everything goes absolutely sideways?
Yeah, that's true. That's very true.
So I was at this gig where the entire sound system got unplugged.
Oh.
And there's, okay. it's a youth event. So there's maybe, I don't know, 500 youth out there. And all of a sudden, everything goes down. Soundboard's down. Wedges are down. Lights are down. All of the amps go down. So literally all you have is the drums.
Was it a circuit breaker? Did someone literally unplug it from the wall?
Nope. It was a guy by the name of Ted kicking the one extension cord out of the outlet.
Ted Tedder.
That's right. Yeah. Good old Ted. And the funny thing is mm-hmm. he was our boss at the time. So So what do you do? All of a sudden mm-hmm. everything's down, and how a band reacts to that. You can either just shut everything down and complain, or you can turn it into something else. So what we did at the drop of a hat, without even thinking about it, we divided up. So my wife, Beth, who was not my wife at the time, went over to the right-hand side, stage right-hand side, and started clapping and got that side clapping. I stood up over here on the left-hand side and started clapping a different beat. So it was like clap, 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 clap. And then I started doing triplets. And we just kind of kept going back and forth until the power came back up and we just started going. So at no point did the drums stop.
All right.
And we just immediately, you just punt to something else. And we call that, you and I call that, because we were taught by the same people, that's called punting, where if everything goes wrong, what are you going to do? So you can just stop and let it stop and let it die, or you can make it into something that's memorable and, you know, make it into something cool, save the day, keep going. And that kind of is it's a mark of professionalism, really.
It really is. And one of the key parts to that is also knowing your audience and what you can do. So you've got a youth event. You've got 500 to however many hundred youth out there that, you know, when everything goes down, everyone could freak out. Mm-hmm. Or you could keep moving forward doing something and they think it's part of the show.
Right.
Yep. And they go, man, that was the best thing. When that ended up occurring, I actually recently had a podcast with John where he talked about having the flu and He was like, at any given moment, if I'm not there, it's time to go do something else. And that's punting. Yep. That's exactly it. And they were like, okay, it's time for the acoustic song. That's where we're going.
Yeah. I've had to do that also where I had to put my bass down and walk off stage, throw up into a garbage can, walk back out on a stage and keep playing.
Yeah.
That was not ideal. I don't.
No, like that is not ideal. But that is pretty important to have those types of things. So that would be a bit of advice to anybody out there who is a professional musician. Maybe they're a loner. They're all by themselves. Sorry. A solo player.
Solo.
Not
solo.
A loner. I'm so sorry.
somebody who doesn't have to split the check.
Yeah, that's really what it is. Unless they're married.
Well, true.
Just kidding. But, you know, that type of person versus someone that's in a full band or whatever, that term you used before, which was at the drop of a hat, that's one of those things we were also trained on, was you need to have a story that if all of a sudden guitar player breaks a string, if all of a sudden a drum head breaks, if something goes on, you need to have some sort of a filler. Because the dead space, it's okay to have a little dead space.
Right.
Like, and when I say a little, I mean like 10 seconds. We're not talking about 2 minutes.
Right.
So it's okay to have a little bit. But if you're going to have that space, you don't want to be like, okay, Harry, hey, everybody. Like, so you're beautiful. Hi.
Right.
We're the band. You know, you've got to have something that actually has some substance. Like, oh yeah, this was the time we were going to do this anyway.
Yeah.
Yep. We're going to go ahead and we're going to talk about the event that we're at, how great it is to be a part of it. You know, if it's a corporate event, know a little bit about that corporate company. So you can talk about ways in which that company has been impactful towards you, even if it's seed grain that is being done or whatever. And then for the Christian event, having that story you can pull out where you go, okay, we're going to talk about Jesus walking on water. We're going to talk about that time in our life when we feel inadequate, you know, or whatever.
Right. Yeah. I had I was at a bar gig in college where I blew my E string on my bass.
What?
Yeah. I have no idea. So for those of you guitar players, I know you don't know much about bass, but it is very rare to break strings on a bass.
Like, yeah,
it is
without a doubt.
It is very, very rare. It is not something that happens on a regular, you know, basis. And so,
let alone the lowest E string on a 4-string.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, no, I was playing a 5-string, so I was playing my five string Stingray, and I blew my E string.
Okay, I have a question for you on that. Because it is such a large string, does it throw everything way out of tune?
Yes, a lot.
Okay.
Yeah.
I was curious. Yeah. All right.
So what I did to finish the song, I grabbed the E string, yanked it, because it was accordioned at the bottom, yanked it until it broke, and so that at least it fell off the headstock. And then I played the rest of the song, essentially just the root notes. I wasn't playing any melodic bass lines or anything. Now it was super basic. But I finished it on the A string.
Okay.
Because the A string was relatively in tune, so everything got played on that one string to the end of the song.
All right. Jeez.
So then I'm sitting there, and I've got my bass, and I'm like, well, crap, what do I do now? Because I was 15 minutes from my apartment. I didn't have any extra strings with me. Because
why would you need that?
Who breaks strings on a bass?
Yeah, seriously.
So while I'm sitting there trying to figure out what to do, the lead singer, understanding that I now have a dilemma. At worst, I've got to retune and keep going. At best, I need to put a string on, but he's got to fill some time. Mm-hmm. Without dropping a beat, he starts talking about the beer specials they have that night. And he starts talking about, you know, the waiters and waitresses and the bartenders and stuff. So he's able to fill that time in where I was holding the band back. And so then then it became a banter thing where they were talking about drinks and stuff. Well, I was trying to figure out what the heck I was going to do after, you know, blowing my E string.
Right.
So my immediate solution, because I didn't have any strings with me, was to take my low B string, tune it up to an E.
Then
restring everything else. So while it wasn't easy, I then had the EADG again. I just, it was not fast. I you know, where you put your fingers is wrong at that point.
Gosh, did it change the bow on the neck? Because I would imagine that would also crank it down some.
Yeah, so there's a difference between a bass guitar and an electric guitar. Much like the players, the bass guitar is not a prima donna. It's not temperamental. You can do an awful lot to it before it starts barking at you.
Really?
So while it was not ideal, it was good enough for that bar gig. And then, you know, I fixed everything after the fact.
So what you're saying is that unlike the bass player, the bass is not temperamental.
Exactly. That's exactly what I'm saying. Yep. Perfect. Nailed it. Excellent. As always, words of wisdom from Dr. T.
So one of the ones that I would say was a huge downer for me, and I had no backup. And I'm going to be honest, I probably will not have a backup for, is I was playing a church gig, and I had an acoustic. Is my Taylor 710 CE, and I was in Minnesota, which it was the winter, it was incredibly dry, and I had to go play this gig, and I go to play, and I'm like, the electronics aren't working, and I can't figure it out. So what's the first thing you're going to change if all of a sudden you go, okay, the electronics aren't working?
Yeah, check a battery.
That's exactly right. So I pulled out the battery, I brought an extra battery, because that's something I should do, put that in, plugged it back in, started playing, nothing. Couldn't get any sound out of it. So I was like, well, I don't know necessarily what to do. And the only thing I could think was, well, it's acoustic. Just stick a mic in front of it.
Right.
It doesn't take an extra channel. It's the channel you would have been using. Right. So I just need something to be able to put a mic in front of it. And so that's what I did and played the gig. Everything was fine. I just had to be more conscious of where I stood. Yeah. Otherwise, that was about it. Well, later I checked on it. Because I was like, well, I can't have this thing not working. And what I found was that when I put in the damp it humidifier thing, you know, those old systems where you basically it was a sponge, you stuck it in there, you wring it out real good, you stick it into the guitar. Well, I did that. And then I put the case upright in the closet. It leaked all over the electronics and corroded everything. Yeah. I mean, it was ruined on the inside. And I was like, okay, note to self.
Yeah, lesson learned.
We're not going to do that anymore. And actually, to this day, when it comes to humidifying my acoustic, I humidify the room. I get everything good, and then I stick it back in the case. And if I use, like, the damp it or something like that, I just put it in there with, like, a big cloth wrapped around it up by the headstock or down by the cutaway or something like that, and I don't deal with it. Now, since then, I've gotten new ideas, you know, like D'Addario has a fantastic one that they use, which will put in or pull out humidity or anything like that. But since then, I live in Texas, so I don't really deal with the humidity stuff
much. It's not that big a deal.
Yeah, but that was an interesting one. That's a fail, and I learned, honestly, what I learned from that, if I'm going to go for a learning thing, was with an acoustic instrument, it's acoustic. Mm-hmm. So maybe your backup for that is an extra mic as opposed to an extra guitar.
Yeah. I have a Schaller Oyster contact pickup that I carry in my kit, not so much for acoustic guitars, mostly for like when there's a violin or a viola or something, and they
upright bass.
Yeah, they don't have real good ways of miking that, because then you're getting all this ambient noise. But that just sticks right on there. That's our backup for when any sort of anything happens to electronics in an acoustic, because you can just slap that sucker on there and it sounds great. You know, it sounds really really good. But you know, you were bringing up failure at church, so we we were setting up at church one time, and there was some volunteer kids helping set things up, you know, for church.
Oh, that's great to have them helping out in the church, getting a chance to serve.
Mm-hmm. Well, you got to teach your next generation to take your job.
Yeah.
So you got to teach them how to do that sort of thing. So, you know, the ultimate guitar stands that the legs all fold up, their tripod stands, they fold up completely flat, and then you lock the thing in, and the
part that actually locks is the tripod like legs right. yep. to it. Yeah.
Correct. So those are what we were using. And this 10-year-old mm-hmm. kid set the stand up, put it there. Beth took her Les Paul over there, put it on there, and he hadn't locked the lock. Immediately the legs folded and scarf joint break.
Oh my gosh. So like the butt of the guitar hit the ground and then just face planted?
It hit the drum riser and broke the headstock pretty much clean off that Les Paul.
Oh my gosh.
And you know, we were close enough to home that I just drove home, grabbed her Telecaster and brought it and we were done. And but I mean that's a $200 fix at the luthier's place here in town.
$200 fix on a $400 guitar.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, because you're right. It's an Epiphone Les Paul. Yeah. It wasn't a Gibson, but they used the exact same joint. So even if that was a Gibson, the exact same thing would have happened.
Sure. Yeah.
Because that scarf joint is the weakest point on any of those headstocks like that.
Well, with the Gibsons, they don't actually end up doing the scarf joint. It's just one piece of wood, but the break angle right. is greater. So when they say break angle, I mean how well it's going to break at right. that angle. Right. Even though that's the true term, it's like it
yeah.
is what it is. Yeah, that's terrible.
But you know that sort of thing. If we were on tour, well, we're in trouble, right?
Oh yeah.
You can't just go home and get a different guitar. Or if you're like me in college, I had the one guitar. That's all I have. Now, I'm sitting in my room. You can't see it here, but I have multiple bass guitars on the wall next to me now.
Yeah.
So if one goes down, I grab another one and we're fine.
Right.
But, if you're out on tour, what do you do? Right. So that's
right.
that's one of those situations. But, there's been a lot of stuff, especially with my wife Beth's gear and your brother Paul's gear, mm-hmm. where when we're playing at these events where we fly to them, somebody will forget something or
yeah.
Paul still really likes the massive pedal board, with the, yeah. the 12 pedals on it. And sometimes,
oh, he's down to 12. That's great.
Well, that's on the pedal train. That's all he can fit. Now he's running a couple sidecars also,
okay. Perfect.
Yeah. On that pedal board, he'll have a ground issue where he's getting just an insane hum out of the Burninator that you made.
Which he plays single coils, so right. that's going to be
yep.
something that aids to it. And
And it's things as simple as your pedal board stops working the way that you intended, or a pedal craps out for whatever reason, or you have a bad ground in the room that you're in, and that's causing just insane hum everywhere. So we've had a couple of times where Paul basically is unplugging his pedal board or unplugging pedals to take them out of the chain to get rid of a hum because it is yeah. so overwhelmingly bad in that particular setting. Like you can't EQ it out. You can't duck it. It's yeah. there. Unless you're physically yeah. playing notes, that's all you hear. That's yeah. a fairly common thing or, losing power supplies for pedals.
Oh, sure.
Paul currently uses a pedal power.
The pedal power plus.
I think it's a. Yeah, it could be that. I don't remember.
The Voodoo Labs.
Yeah, the Voodoo Labs. So it's got multiple 9-volt and AC and yep. all that stuff going mm-hmm. out of it. But what happens if that sucker goes down?
Well, oh, sure.
Do you have a backup? Do you have, enough 9 volts to power everything and take that one AC powered thing mm-hmm. and actually have the power supply to run it? It's a lot of extra stuff,
It is. And actually, I was having a conversation with Bob Weil of True Tone. And one of the things he said was the best backup for your big power supply, which is like their CS12 or their CS7 or their CS6, which is a lot like that Voodoo Labs Power Plus 2. Mm-hmm. The best thing you can have is just a one spot and a daisy chain sitting in your bag.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I never really thought of it that way because I was always like, well, if I have this, why would I need that? But when you think about it, it's like a $20 insurance policy.
Right.
That can right. still be used.
Yep.
So in which case, yeah, that's probably one of the biggest things is if you have a power supply issue, you need to have extra, and what you're using that for is mm-hmm. important. You need to have extra of that.
Right.
So I come back to that terrible sound that's coming from the guitar when it's not even being played. Then what are you going to do about it? Like, what do you guys actually do about it to try and get rid of it? Because that's obviously, failure is now not just an option. It is happening. Failure is happening. So what are you going to do to try and fix it?
So what we did in that situation, we tried two different things. One was we tried to ground lift the power source going to the pedal board, which is somewhat dangerous.
Here's
why. So your ground then is going from your sound system into a microphone that's on your that's on your amp. In Paul's case, so there's no connection from the sound system to his pedal board and amp, but there is a ground connection from his pedal board to his amp through his guitar cable, right?
Yep.
So if you try to ground lift your pedal board, in theory, you also have to ground lift the amplifier. And if it's a tube amp, then you can get into some issues there. In this case, we tried to ground lift the pedal board, which basically, for everybody out there, again, this we're going to talk about U.S. power because I don't have any idea how to do this in the rest of the world. But essentially with U.S. power, you have the three-pronged outlet. You got the two spades and then the one round one. That round one is the ground. So you have a couple of different options. One is take a pair of pliers, yank that ground completely out of there, and now you're ground lifted. Now that's a fairly irreversible thing. So I don't necessarily suggest that. What you can do though is down at Walmart or Target or Home Depot or any hardware store.
Yep.
They sell these little 99-cent ground lift adapters. And their intention is for the older homes in the United States that don't have that third prong on the outlet, so that you can take and plug that thing into whatever it is that you have that has three prongs and plug it into an outlet that only has two prongs.
Yeah, it's an adapter.
It's an adapter. They cost about 99 cents. They take up no space at all in your rig. And they're...
You can just leave it in the pedal board.
Yeah, they're super useful.
Back of the amp.
And so that's... We tried that. It didn't work. So we ground lifted the amp as well. That didn't work. So then we're thinking, okay, there's an issue with one of your pedals. And we just started...
Or the cable.
So we started bypassing pedals. That didn't work. So then we realized it must have been a cable. So then ultimately what we did is we replaced one of his short 8-inch cables with a 25-foot guitar cable. Because that was the spare that we had.
That's what you have.
Right.
Who cares about the impedance? Just at this point, we needed not make this noise.
You know, that does bring it to, it kind of brings me to the things that have gone bad. I mean, even so far as I was playing a gig one time and my strap lock completely just, the screw came all the way out of my bass.
Oh, yeah.
And then all of a sudden I'm standing there with a perfectly functional bass and no strap.
Yep. Looks like you're sitting down.
Well, no. So then I grabbed a roll of gaff tape that the production company had sitting right next to the stage, and I gaff taped the whole horn of that guitar then was covered in gaff tape. And it made it through the end of that session, and then I fixed it.
Yeah.
Which the fix for that, in case, you know, you're a guitar player, you never leave the studio, you never leave your home. When you go out and gig, things like this happen. Understanding the simple fix for things like this, you can either take it to a guitar repair place and have them fix it, or you can go
get some dowel rod, all that stuff.
Even simpler than that.
Yep.
So much simpler. You get a package of flat toothpicks.
Yeah.
And some Elmer's glue, just school glue, white school glue, wood glue, doesn't matter. CA glue, if all you have is super glue, use that. You put a toothpick in there, put some glue in there, shove that hole full of toothpicks, break them off, kind of take your knife and just kind of scrab them flat, run your screw back down in there. It will never come out again.
Yeah. That's one of the things that I've done a number of times. I keep 5 toothpicks in my bag because it doesn't take much.
Nope.
And I just leave it there because if that screw comes out, then, or it's really loose and it won't stay in and you're just tightening and tightening and tightening, I don't even worry about the glue because I'm on the road. I don't need the glue.
Right.
I just shove it in there, like break off the piece, shove the other side of it in, and mm-hmm. usually one to two takes care of it.
Right.
Rescrew that thing in, and usually I don't have to ever adjust it again.
No. Ever. And that's it's a super fast fix. Just like, let's say you get a burr in your nut, and that's causing you to break strings. Well, one of the simple ways to fix that is to take your broken string and saw it back and forth over the nut,
mm-hmm.
and that'll oftentimes, just that little bit of friction will take that out.
Yeah.
So, Dr. T, in the process of doing this, the slot got way too deep. I didn't know when to stop, and it just got super deep. Okay. Yep. Well, now you're sitting there, your string's way too low. It's buzzing on the second fret, and nothing good can come of this. Well, you take a little bit of baking soda and super mm-hmm. glue. A little drop of super glue, sprinkle some baking soda on there.
Do it again.
A little drop of super glue, sprinkle some baking soda on there. And then you come back in and you file it back down to where it needs to be. It's another one of those road fixes where, you know, in a perfect world, you'd have a spare nut and you'd have nut saws and you could take it and put it on there and cut it and all done. In reality, nobody has that.
No, and actually, one time I had a nut slot that ended up being a little too low. I was out on tour. I was playing. And because of temperature changes, everything started shifting a little bit. And I adjusted the truss rod, and I was able to get it to a spot where I go, yep, that's good. But that nut was just a little too low. And what I did was I took the string end of that string, and mm-hmm. I cut off a little piece. I stuck it in the slot. Laid the string back on top of it, and it rose it too much, but at the same time, it now was playable.
Right.
And it wasn't beautiful sounding on the open string. Don't get me wrong. Like, it was not perfect, but it got me through the gig.
Right. Yeah.
It was the last show on the tour. We were good mm-hmm. to go. And then I got to the next place and everything was fine. And actually on that guitar, I've never had a problem since. So I don't know what was going on at that moment, but maybe it was a burr or something, and it hammered it out by sticking in that string. But, you know, it's interesting that you bring up even that idea of like the toothpicks and all of that, because I had a time where I was playing an Epiphone Sheridan guitar and I had put a Bigsby on it and I had done some different things. It actually had PRS pickups in it.
Okay.
Which, by the way, when you put in PRS pickups into a normal guitar, they actually have the magnet flip the other way, and it works with the way that their switching works. So it's out of phase in the center. So I actually took the pickup apart to pull out the Alnico pickup, flip it around, put it right back in, and then ta-da, it sounded great. It was awesome. Well, I was playing it, and the screw on the back sheared off. Like, it was gone. And I was like, I don't have an extra screw. I don't have something to screw this in. Because I'm not going to just use a Phillips head screw, you know, driver, just like, okay, I got it. You know, I need a drill. I need something that'll do this.
Right.
And so I just finished the gig sitting down. It was really the best option that I had. Now, had I had a bunch of gaff tape, maybe I would have gone ahead and just like done it to the horn or whatever. It was the last song, so that was nice. But at the same time, it's like, gosh, you're bringing up some PTSD, man. That's what's happening. I forgot all about that
story.
Well,
you know, my idea of bringing this up, Dr. T, is that we have gone through these failures. So we know now, because we had those failures, we know a better solution. We know the spares to bring in case these things happen. We know, like, I had my wireless rig. I was running one of those, the Relay G50s, Line 6. You know, they run on the 2.4 gigahertz digital frequency.
Yeah.
Boy, they were all the rage back in the
Still use them.
I've stopped using it for this reason, and I'll explain why. The ballrooms that we were playing in, at this point, our band was doing a lot of these youth events, these large youth events, and they had a lot of Wi-Fi-enabled things in the ballrooms.
Mm-hmm.
And I was having so much problem with dropout because these wireless access points, because they're also 2.4 gigahertz, they're cycling through channels on there.
Yeah.
And that was interfering with my wireless. And so I'd be playing along, and all of a sudden it would just drop out, or it'd go, and it'd make a crazy noise. And it was because of the hotel's Wi-Fi. And I started getting it to the point where I would put in my signal chain. So I would have my wireless on my base, and it would go to the receiver. then I would put a 20-foot or a 25-foot guitar cable between that and the direct box, because usually the sound guy wants to have direct, and then run from that into the bass amp. So that in case my wireless rig started dropping or started making weird noises again, I just unplug that sucker, go unplug the wireless receiver, and run that guitar cable right into my bass and finish the set on, you know, wired.
Okay. Yeah.
It got pretty bad with mine. Now, mine was also one of the first generation Relay G50s. So it had very wide channels on it, and you couldn't do the smaller frequency adjusting that you can with the newer ones. But I've gotten to the point now where all the bands that I play with, I'm not really moving all over the stage. I more or less stay in one part of the stage. So I just run wired now. I don't even worry about wireless anymore.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, and for me, a lot of the times the reason why wireless works out so well for me is because I'm usually the one that people look over and go, Dr. T, this is messed up. Dr. T, can you tell me how to do this again? Hey, Dr. T, what do you think about? And it's like, okay. I mean, I don't want to have to take off the guitar, take, you know, do all these things. I just want to walk on over and just take care of it. And that's the reason why people will be like, you literally have a stage the size of maybe like a 4x4. Why do you need a wireless right there?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
You know what? Because. That's all I have to say.
Yep. That's it.
Because the tone's in the wireless.
Right, the just tone's kidding. In the wireless, yeah. And, you know, some of the – one of the, last thing I want to bring up about breaking things. Anymore, I don't ever play with wedges. I almost only play with in-ear monitors.
Yeah.
Part of that's because the type of things I'm doing, I'm not playing in, you know, VFWs anymore. I'm not playing in, you know, bar gigs where the sound system they have – and I'm putting this in air quotes, the sound system.
Sound system.
Yes, sound system, wink, wink. They have oftentimes is two Radio Shack microphones from the 80s plugged into, you know, two Bose speaker stacks. And it's not great. So you're like, okay, in those situations, I'm not going to use in-ears. I'm going to use whatever amp they have or whatever amp I brought and just put some earplugs in my ears and so that I'm not killing myself and go from there.
Yeah.
But because we almost always play with in-ears, what happens when either my own in-ears break or somebody in the band's in-ears break?
Yeah, right.
Right. Now, you and I both rock the custom molded All Clairs, and they're
the
really
Spire
nice.
Six.
The Spire 6. They're really, really nice.
Yeah.
But I also have a very old set of Westone Universal two dual driver ears that I keep in my bag at all times. I also have a set of Sennheiser single driver earbuds. And I also have a set of these Amazon KZ-10 $50 specials that are surprisingly good for the money.
Yeah.
And I bring those to every single gig. Do I ever need those? Well, yeah. Twice I've needed them where somebody forgot theirs, and so they were going to use their iPhone earbuds as their in-ear monitors.
No.
I was like,
that, people.
Yeah, you know, you're a vocalist. This is not a thing that's going to happen right now.
Right.
I have also had it where before I had my All Clairs, I had some Alien Ears triple drivers. And they the cable crapped out like sooner than anything else. So, I've gotten to the point where I always bring spares of those also.
I have my All Clairs Spire 6s, and I have a spare cable that I keep with it. And then I also have my old set of ears, which are Fidelity ears that I recommend for the sound and I do not recommend for the customer service.
Right. Yeah.
The biggest issue is they have a specialty cable and you really can only buy it from them.
That's that round one, right?
Yeah. And the problem is they have been out of stock on that cable for 5 years.
Right.
So what am I supposed to do with that thing?
Yep. Well, not use them.
So the thing is that like they work great as earplugs. So I've got that. But then on top of that, the cable still works, but I don't have a spare for it. And actually, I've thought about sending in those ears to AllClear because AllClear says they will rehouse some.
Yeah.
And I'm hoping that they would rehouse it so I can just have the same type of cable that the other one has.
Right.
Because they are a great backup.
Right. Yeah.
All right. Well, I think this is probably a good time for us to take a break for the sponsor. When we come back from that, I have two things I want to talk about, and then we'll finish things up. One is cases, because, you know, you mentioned this before. Cases are a big deal, and we don't really think about that when we buy the gear because we just want to hang it on our wall. But, I mean, play it. We want to play it. That's what we want to do. So that, and then also maybe just do a brief little... If you had a survival backup kit, what are you going to do? What are you going to put in there? And then we'll kind of close things out. So let's take a word from our sponsor. If you are looking for a way to help support the Tweed Couch and it costs no money to you, then check out our YouTube channel and become a subscriber. Also, you can tell someone about the podcast and share an episode with them. Thank you for listening and thank you for your support. Here's another sponsor. Are you wanting to join a party with a purpose? If you love music and camping, then come to LifeFest in Oshkosh, Wisconsin. I'll see you there. Here is our last sponsor. Since 2003, the Kretzmann Guitar Company has been repairing and building guitars. In 2021, Kretzmann started a production of a solid body electric guitar for anyone, student to expert. You can check them out at KretzmannGuitars.com. Okay, well, we're back, and we're going to start with cases.
Yeah.
And how cases are important. And I actually have something that is a hot-button issue for me. I want to start this one out because there is something I am passionate about, and that thing is that I hate. Yeah, I'm using it hard T on that one.
Hard T,
soft gig bags for guitars.
Right, yeah.
Hate them. Even the mono cases. Which people swear by.
Right. Dr. T, so let's say you go out and you spend $7,000 on your favorite guitar player's signature series guitar. Mm-hmm. Let's just hypothetically call it a Silver Sky. So you go buy this $7,000 Silver Sky. You're like, oh, this is such a cool guitar. Mm-hmm. This is great. I can't wait to go play this in a gig in this incredibly flimsy gig bag they give me with this guitar.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
I'd boycott that company if I were you.
Asinine. Yeah. Okay. So... Possibly even Acetin. Like, it's that much stupid.
Right.
But, you know, the thing is that I'm not saying that all gig bags are terrible because, well, first I want to say this. What do you really gain from the gig bag? You might be like, oh, I can put it over my shoulders. Oh, I can throw in some capos and some picks and an extra cable and my iPad or something like that. But they actually make hard shell gig bags, like the polyfoam ones.
Yeah.
Those I like. I like those because they give some rigidity to the actual instrument. So, yes, I have what would be considered a $7,000 PRS, and I have what is considered a $6,000 Gibson, and I will put those in the poly foam type cases. I'm not sending it under a plane, but I would take it on the road with it.
You know, there are use cases for the gig bag over a hard side case.
Blasphemy.
Well... So I bought my son a bass guitar last year for his birthday that he could then play at the jazz band in middle school, and now he's playing it, you know, at the Wednesday night youth service at church, right?
Yeah.
So he doesn't have and he's a very capable 14-year-old, but he doesn't have the strength to carry a bass in a hard case. To and from, as well as his folder full of music, as well as his cables and his tuner and all that thing. So what he does now is he has this gig bag that he throws on like a backpack and then carries, you know, his stuff with him. That's fine because it goes from my house into my car and then from my car into the church.
Right.
The odds of that guitar getting screwed up in that gig bag are pretty slim. and it meets a very specific use case. But what I would say that the majority of, and the people I'm speaking to now are the people who are going out and gigging. They're going out to do, you know, gigs at their local bar or at their church, or they're going out on tour. I used to just go with the case that my guitar came in.
Right.
It was a Fender P bass, and it was just a Fender P bass case.
Yeah.
That essentially is Tolex covered cardboard over a little teeny tiny bit of styrofoam. And there's, why on earth would you use this as protection for your instrument? Now, keeping
in mind,
it's
a dust cover.
Yeah, essentially, it's a dust cover. Yeah, use the dust cover. Somewhere John is triggered right now by the dust cover.
Yeah, I know. I know.
So, if you are a gigging musician, you are getting paid to do a job. And your job is to perform your music or whatever music you're performing to the best of your ability. And if your instrument can't make it from point A to point B without getting damaged, you're going to have a lot harder time consistently being able to get paid to do the thing that you're getting paid to do.
Yeah.
You know, so I recommend 100% for the vast majority of professional musicians. And what's the difference between a professional and an amateur?
You get paid for it.
Getting paid. That's the only difference. Yep. You don't have to have a record deal to be a professional musician. You just have to get paid to play. And as soon as you get paid to play, then you, at least the way that I was taught, you are going there to do a job, do the best job you can.
Right.
And if your tools are broken, you can't do that job.
Yeah, so, you are assuming a responsibility.
Yeah.
That responsibility is to come forward with a product that is the best you can do at the moment.
Right.
And if you didn't get the right case, if you decided that your guitar came in a cardboard case, because some guitars don't come with a case at all, and you decide to just cart it around in your cardboard case, and it gets broken, that's on you. That's not on the manufacturer.
That's right. It's like you were saying with, you know, how to get the gig. It was about 40 episodes ago. You were doing that with John. And, you know, one of the things of how to get a gig, how to keep the gig is by doing the job that you were hired to do well. And if your guitar breaks, well, that's going to happen. If it breaks for a very stupid reason, like you were carrying it in a gig bag and somebody stepped on it, you're not doing a professional job.
Yeah.
You know, there are cases that I really recommend. So I have my bass guitars in a full-on Pelican case. Pelican, for our European friends, it's called Pelly. They are military spec cases. They are rotomolded plastic. They're filled with usually like 3 inches of foam in three layers. There's a bottom layer. There's a middle layer that's pick and pluck foam that you can kind of pick to be the exact outline of your of whatever you're putting in there. And then there's another inch on top. These are normally used by the military, by police agencies for rifles.
They're also like waterproof, and they're also, I mean, everything. Yeah.
So in that mil spec, they have this whole thing about being able to drop a 15-pound javelin from a certain, you know, height onto it and not have it puncture. There's a crush rating. There's waterproof. There's airproof. So essentially, whenever I'm going to a fly-to gig, I will always have my bass in this because, man, if they break that guitar, boy, they earned it. I mean, they literally drove the plane over it to break it. There is no other way.
Okay, my biggest complaint with a Pelican case is no one understands the numbering system. It's like a Gretsch guitar. It's like, what is this number? I don't even know what this is. Did you just arbitrarily pick something up?
Well, and what's worse is as Pelican buys their competitors, they inherit numbering systems from their competitors. And because these are all governmental agencies buying these things, they have to maintain those exact makes and models of their competitors' cases. But so I have my bass in one of those. I also use a smaller carry-on size for what I'll call my everyday carry, the stuff that I take to and from every single gig that I go to now.
Yeah.
It's like throwing stuff in a backpack, except mine is a Pelican 1510 full of all sorts of gear.
Yeah. Fill in your arbitrary number here. Got it.
Yeah. Exactly. Exactly. So the problem with those Pelican cases, there's a couple of problems. One, they're heavy.
Yes.
And two, they're expensive. So the one that I have is on sale, a $250 US case. So they are not cheap. So I'm have my $2,000 bass guitar. Well, yeah, I'm going to spend $200 to protect that thing. So now, under almost no circumstance, will that bass ever get damaged.
Right.
I can put it in a trailer and stack other things on top of it. It's going to be fine.
Right.
If it gets wet, it's going to be fine. If I can put it under an airplane, it's going to be fine. And back in the day when I used to do, now I'm old now, I got more gray in my beard than I care to admit, but we used to go out on these, you know, van tours. And one of the ways that you get your guitars in there is you stick them underneath the benches in the van and you put your feet on them. I have absolutely no problems doing that with this Pelican case because I know that there is almost no situation where my bass is going to get hurt in that.
Right.
You know?
Well, and I think that goes with many of the other things as well. So you're talking about the Pelican case. And yes, I even though I made fun of the cardboard case, you know, it's better than no case. Like
yes,
if you
is.
Have an amp that came in a actually, my Marshall, I had my Marshall head in an actual like Rode case.
Right.
And then my 412 cabinet, I made that case out of cardboard and duct tape and basically just set it over the top of it.
Right.
And is there dings and marks on my 412? Yes.
Yes.
But it was better than nothing.
Right.
We've all seen that Ampeg 810 that has been on tour and it's basically missing all of its Tolex.
Yep. Exactly.
Simply because of that. So cardboard's better than nothing. I will give it
cardboard
that.
Cardboard is better than nothing.
Do you do custom road cases at all?
I have back in the day. So before I found Pelican, I used to find these TSA rated cases. So that was the big deal before the rotomolded plastic cases. And those utilize a laminated vinyl piece on top of a quarter inch plywood, and then it has aluminum extrusions all the way around, and usually they have like corner pieces and stuff,
which are heavy in their own right.
They're extremely heavy, and that's the downfall. There is no way that you can actually check one of those onto an airplane, which is funny because they're ATA rated, which means they follow but they become too heavy then. So that's my downfall. And we had one of those for my wife Beth had a it's an HD500 pedal board.
Yeah.
And it loved it. It did everything she wanted it to do. She thought it was just the cat's pajamas. And we went to gigs with this in an ATA rated case.
Yep.
It went under an airplane, came back, and there was a big old gouge in it.
Oh, yeah.
And it broke two of the buttons on there now. So then one of her banks, she could only use one button. And it was because of that.
This is actually a story that Paul tells me on why he doesn't want an all-in-one modeler.
Yeah, okay. I mean, listen, I think that that's not the reason he doesn't want one of those. That one exceptional time.
Yeah.
I mean, I've got a lot of other stories with Paul about him forgetting power supplies, cables breaking, pedals completely breaking, not having 9 volts, all that stuff, which is why in my Pelican 1510 everyday carry, I have all of these necessary backups, not only for myself, but for other people in my band. Now, I am no longer a touring musician. I have a full desk job. I can afford to have all of these extra things. So I recognize that this is a luxury.
Right.
But in my Pelican 1510, my everyday carry bass case, I have extra cables. I have enough to run all of my cables as well as the cables for at least one of my other bandmates. So I always have at least two extra guitar cables, and they're not short ones. They're 25-foot guitar cables.
Right. Well, right, because even though a 10-footer might be able to make it work and that would be fine, Right. Why? I mean, are you really losing that much tone in that amount of time? And then plus, okay, and I guess we're going on to necessary backups at this point, but this is one of those things that I look at, and when somebody says, wow, you brought a 25-foot guitar cable as a backup? Like, that seems a little excessive. Well, what if I need it to run to the amp? What if I need it to run to the guitar? What if it needs to be somebody else's? I mean, how many times I've given someone my gear because I brought it, and I didn't need it at the moment, but it got the gig going. I mean, even though some people may be like, well, that's on them, but are you able to play the gig the way you would otherwise?
Right.
It's on you too.
Yeah.
It is.
Yeah.
It is on them. It is their fault. You are rescuing the day so that you can do what you wanted to do, which was play a show.
Exactly. Yeah. So I have, I always bring cables. I bring strings. So now, because of that one time that I blew that low E string, I always have at least two sets of bass strings in there.
And also guitar strings.
I have I have three sets of guitar strings. One of them is appropriate for an acoustic, and then two of them are usually tens. I'll have two packs of Elixir tens in them, because that's what Beth uses, and I know I can make it work on Paul's guitars.
Yep.
And then also something to keep in mind, all of the tools necessary to change a string. So I have a string winder. I will never use that on my bass, but I have one because they cost $5 at Guitar Center, and they you just throw them in there to take no space. I have a pair of pliers with a good wire cutter in it so that I can cut that sucker off instead of trying to string it all the way through.
Yep.
I also have tools that are necessary to fix intonation on either my instrument or anybody else in the band's instrument. So I have screwdrivers. I have Allen keys. I have, and my bass, it has this little cog wheel. Looks like a Tinker Toy that you put little around thing, and then you twist it. So I have a tool specific for that, but I have also forgotten that and had to use an Allen key, and it works fine.
Yeah, you just use an Allen key. Yeah.
Right. But knowing that, you know, what Beth uses for guitars most of the time, knowing what Paul uses for guitars most of the time, I can adjust a truss rod in any of our instruments or reset intonation in any of our instruments. And also, because of all that, I have at least three tuners in my box at any time. I have a TU-3, I have a Polytune-3, and then I have actually I have two of those clip-on Polytune tuners, the headstock tuners, because in line I usually have one that I don't really use as a tuner. I use it as a mute. But then if somebody else, if their tuner goes down, you want to make sure that they have a tuner as well.
Yeah.
But I will always have those headstock tuners so that if somebody's string breaks, even if it's in a band that's on before us, I will go try as hard as I can to help them. I'll go throw a string on that sucker, get it as close to in tune as I can as a non-guitar player. I'm not great at that, but I can do it. And that's better than them having to stop and do it.
Right. So far, of all the things that you have on your list, I agree with every single piece of that, and I usually have something. Like, Gibson actually makes, like, a multi-tool type thing, and I'll bring that, even though it doesn't get all of it. It gets me enough of it. But I also add in there however many or whatever style of battery that I need. If I'm bringing something with 9 volts, then I need to have 9 volts. But there are times where I need the CR2023, you know, disc battery that's like the size of a nickel. And that's one of those that, what does it go on? Well, the headstock tuner. I have a mandolin that uses two of them as their little pickup to go in there. So that's one of those that I bring because, well, first of all, it's easy to bring. They're small. They're tiny. I mean, seriously, you can just leave it with your pocket change. It's not a big deal. But if you need it, you should have it. And then, of course, as mentioned before, the one spot is always something that is a decent idea to have hanging around. Yes, there are some things that need 12 volts. Yes, there are some things that are AC and not DC and whatever. But the other stuff can still be able to do it.
Right.
Something I've never gone with that I probably should have gone with was tubes. Because sometimes you need that. But For me, that backup ends up being my HX Stomp, because if my amp goes down, well, on my pedal board is something that I really like for delays and reverbs and tremolo, but also can be an amplifier in a pinch if something goes down.
Right. I have never had a tube go down on me in a gig outside of a music festival where we were doing backline and we had access to other things. I readily know that if a tube blows on something, I don't have the skill set to fix it, and I know it's dangerous to do it, so I don't even try.
If it's the tube itself, then you're good to go. If it's something inside there that's doing it, then don't mess with it.
Yeah.
Don't mess with it at all. And actually, I've had twice where the amp was, well, really three times where the amp was really messed up, but twice where it was just dead. And both of them was the same Dr. Z that I had. And I had this 12AX7 LPS that went in the V2 position. And I went to LifeFest bringing my Maz Junior.
Right.
And I got there and it was dead. Didn't work. And I ended up using one of the AC30s. Everything was fine.
Right.
And then the second time I was going to a church to play the gig, and I brought my Maz Junior, put it down, didn't play. And both of those times I replaced it with what the factory said to use, which is that 12AX7 Sovtek LPS.
Yeah.
And finally, I was like, well, I don't have any more of these, but I do have Sovtek like WTs, 12AX7 WT. Put that thing in, never, ever had a problem. And I mentioned it one time on a forum. I think those LPSs are just a terrible choice. And I actually had Dr. Z come on the forum and tell me I was wrong and I am spreading false lies. And it wasn't that bad, but he basically was like, you don't know what you're talking about. You have no idea. And I will say, you know what, Dr. Z, you know far more than I do. Like, I admit it.
Yep.
But I have two experiences that say there was something wrong with that amp and that tube. That's it. That's all I got.
Yeah. So going back to batteries, you know, you were saying that you carry the batteries for everything that you use.
Yeah.
I don't even worry about that. 9 volts
and
double A's.
You carry all batteries.
Yeah. Everything runs on 9 volts and double A's, except for what you were talking about with the little clip-on tuners. I carry an extra tuner. I mean, they don't even have to be good batteries. I carry the Amazon Basics 9 volts and the Amazon Basics double A's, and I usually have about 8 double A's and about 4 9 volts, and it's fine.
You need to get them through the gig, not the next year of gigs.
Yeah, I don't. You listen, you want to put an Energizer Platinum whatever in there afterwards? Great. We just finished out our set. Awesome.
Yeah.
So batteries, strings, like we talked about before, I carry extra in-ears now.
Yep.
I also have I have a little box of toothpicks that I have taped shut because it came open one time and that was a nightmare. I also carry a roll of ProGaff gaff tape. Now, I understand because we are on a multinational podcast that gaffer tape might mean something else in other regions of the world.
Yeah.
It might more accurately equate to what we call duct tape here in the United States.
Not the same.
Not the same thing. So gaff tape specifically is something used by the production industry. It's also used by the film industry. Mm-hmm. And it is a cloth tape that has a non-marking adhesive to it. So you can it won't leave a mark on a floor when you pull it up. You can put it on carpet and it won't leave residue.
Yeah, the only time I've ever had pro gaffer tape leave residue is when that thing has been on that for over a year or dealing with a lot of temperature change.
Oh, yeah, many, many years. Or if you put it on like a hot light, it'll bake on there. But I have a roll of that in my case as well, mostly because if something goes bad, like so when my strap fell off, I just taped that sucker back on. We had a situation where some personal monitors, a Behringer P16 little personal monitor thing.
It's kind of like the Aviums or the Emmys.
Aviums or there's a lot of brand specific ones now, but it had fallen off of a desk. And so now the power supply only works when you have it in a very specific position.
Oh, an angled position.
Right. Yeah. So then you throw a piece of gaff tape on there and that sucker's going to stay there, you know, until you're done. everybody has had a situation like that with a guitar pedal or with something where you got to hold the cable just right and kind of squint for it to work. Well, then you're going to tape it in place. You're not going to walk around and try to find, you know, scotch tape or duct tape or whatever.
Right.
You
have masking tape, painter's tape. Yeah. No way.
You know, all of those will work if that's what you have, but having a roll of gaff tape is by far the better solution.
Yeah, absolutely.
I have a lot of other things in my case as well, but those are the things for the guitar aficionado, you know, the home guitar player who's going out and gigging for the first time, or somebody who doesn't do it repeatedly. Those are the things that you want to have, that type of thing, or have somebody in your band who's going to bring that type of thing for you.
Okay. I guess it is probably time for us to get to final thoughts, our last thoughts on all of this. Yep. And why don't you go ahead and go first?
I have two final thoughts. One is put your instrument in a better case than you think you need. Mm-hmm. Be willing to spend a significant amount of money to get the best case that you can afford for your guitar so that your guitar doesn't get damaged to and from gigs.
Yeah,
that's something that I think goes way unnoticed. People overlook that all the time. And I really do feel like if people just would pay more attention to that, the vast majority of issues with guitars, especially going to gigs, will be fixed. My second final thought, I might get to a tertiary final thought, but we'll go with two for now.
A bonus. Yeah,
my second final thought is try to anticipate the things that could fail. And make sure that you have thought through, if this fails, what happens? You know, I think back to my 20-year-old self playing bar gigs and playing stuff. Man, I didn't think about any of that stuff.
Yeah.
And that's probably why I didn't make a lot of money as a bar, you know, because stuff happened and we had to kind of live through it. So try to anticipate that. Try to come up with, especially the easy things, like not showing up to the gig with picks. Well, I also have 3 or 4 guitar picks in my Pelican case, even though I don't play bass with a pick. You know, just come prepared for a worst case scenario, and you will be a better, successful professional musician.
Yeah. I guess in my final thoughts, where I'm mostly sitting is that it is important to have failure, because you learn more from your mistakes than you do your successes.
That's true.
And I think that if you didn't think of something and you thought of everything and something crazy happens, it doesn't mean that now you need to have that forever as your backup. Mm-hmm. But it does mean you need to think about that point of failure and go, could I have prevented it in the first place? If you break strings every time you go to a gig, but you don't change your strings very often, well, that's your point of failure. Failure is the option, right? If you know that you're going to do this longer gig and you're going to be tossing this case into the trailer and not into the van because there's no room in the van or the bus or the car or whatever, well, then you need to look at that point of failure that is about to happen and make sure that you've got something. Well, even to the point, it's the pandemic now.
Right.
If you know you're going to the bar, maybe you need to bring your own mic.
Yeah. Or two. Exactly. Yeah.
Because you don't know what's about to happen. You don't know what's going to show up. And these are things that are really important. There are many points of failure that can happen. Yeah. Jer, I am so glad that you did this conversation with me. This was your idea, and it was a great idea. This is great group therapy. This is great couples counseling. We did a good job.
Yeah. Yeah. Hey, Dr. T, I really appreciate the opportunity to come on here and talk about things that failures that I have had in my life, which I think make me a better musician, and hopefully be able to pass that on so it doesn't have to happen to other people.
Yeah, this is great. All right. Well, thank you for being here. Until next time.
Absolutely. Bye. Peace, brother.
Well, that's all the time we have for the Tweed Couch Guitar Therapy session. If you like what you heard, make sure you leave 5 stars in review. Also, be sure to check us out on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube. And remember, you are your greatest asset. Until next time.